Hello, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to this episode of Fake TV Critic, a podcast where I discuss the week's biggest TV news headlines, recap and analyze some of my favorite shows, and let you know what you should be watching. A very slow news week, some cancellations, some renewals and stuff, like The Irrational and Found, both of which are new on NBC, got renewed. The second season of Reacher on Amazon Prime is releasing on the 15th, and they renewed it for a third season ahead of that. But the one that I'm most interested in is that CBS canceled Bob Hart's Abishola, which is a Chuck Lorre sitcom, which if you are unaware, he is the man behind Two and a Half Men, The Big Bang Theory, Young Sheldon. This Bob Hart's Abishola, he is a, or was, I guess, a WBCBS stalwart and like a very reliable creator of TV shows. He also did Mom, and it was always very rare that if he created a show, it wouldn't run for at least a couple or more seasons. And with this cancellation, Bob Hart's Abishola will be canceled after the end of its fifth season, which is what's going to be airing this spring. Chuck Lorre will have no shows on broadcast television. And I feel like this is the first time in decades, it's definitely the first time in decades that that's happened. And more even than that is, I'm so curious. And I know that most people probably don't care about this because you're not weirdos or old like I am. But like what broadcast TV looks like in the very near future, you know, the model's been dying with cord cutting, with people DVRing and watching on demand and streaming and all of that, that the model of in particular broadcast TV, like the ABC, the CBS, the Fox, the NBC, and the CW, that those networks have been dying on the vine for probably about 10 years now. And that's been expedited, like with the CW being sold to Nexstar, which I talked about a lot as it was happening. And now in this post-strike landscape, I really wonder how much the strike has sped up the dissolution of the traditional broadcast model. I mean, like I said, it's been happening for a long time. It's why you don't see very many new broadcast TV shows. Like when I first started becoming interested in TV ratings, I think I've talked about this before, but it was because I got really tired of shows that I really enjoyed getting canceled usually with no resolution. And I wanted to understand why that kept happening. Why do these shows that I love keep getting canceled prematurely? And I started reading up on TV ratings. Because, you know, prior to that, I was like every other fan of TV where I was just coming from it from an emotional place. Where, but this show is so good and I love it. How dare they take it away from me? Not realizing that obviously television is a business and you know, you have to make money on a show in order to spend money on the show. So I started looking at TV ratings and kind of tracking like what is good, what is bad when it comes to ratings relative to each other shows on the network, to shows on other networks on the same night or whatever. And that really changed the way that I watch TV because I would know what to kind of invest my time in. Or if I enjoyed something, I would be able to kind of temper my expectations. But regardless, when I was first interested in TV ratings, this was back when the WB still existed. And UPN, you know, like before the CW even became a thing was when I started getting interested in TV ratings and following them. So when I was doing this, I'm going to say it's like probably around 2005, I want to say, is when I started like every once in a while researching, okay, what's happening? And then I really got heavy into like the math of it, the prediction of it. Like it's very much kind of like fantasy sports when you get enough of the same nerdy, weird people who enjoy talking about these numbers together. And It was around 2008, maybe 2007, 2009. Like, I was in college, basically. And there were dozens and dozens and dozens of new broadcast TV shows. So again, on those five over-the-air free networks every season. And now, like this season in particular, because, you know, partially because of the strike, but also a lot because of just ratings in general and how much it costs to order and promote new shows, ABC has one new scripted series premiering this season. CBS has four. The CW has one. Fox has one, but it's also not actually new. It's been in development for years as an animated show, Grimmsburg and Krypopolis. And then NBC has one. Plus the two, Irrational and Found, that were meant for last season but were held because they knew about the strike. There's less on. There are fewer TV, new scripted TV shows on all of five of these networks in one season than there would be on any one given network like 10 years ago. So I have a point. Again, I always come back. So when it comes to like CBS, I don't know what their schedule is going to look like next year. Like, I'm really wondering if this strike landscape did more harm to performers than we even realize, because it's going to affect how and when shows are ordered moving forward profoundly, I think. Like, when we are now, CBS has now canceled most, like a lot, of its upcoming or of its current lineup. It has of scripted shows. It's canceled Blue Bloods, Bob Hart's Abishola, SWAT, and Young Sheldon. When they're getting rid of this many long-standing series, it's really hard to imagine that they're going to replace them with new scripted content, because the new scripted content tends so often to not find an audience because they're on places like streaming networks that they're. So I'm wondering if moving forward, a lot of the TV schedules that we're looking at are going to look like what they did this past fall, where, you know, we're getting an entire night that's just Survivor and The Amazing Race, or that we're going to get a lot more game shows, or a lot more unscripted content like FBI True, which was like a true crime series. Things like that, or imports like NCIS Sydney, or what the CW is doing, where they're bringing in, you know, the Spencer sisters and Sullivan's Crossing and stuff from Australia and Canada. So I think we're going to start seeing a lot more of that and a lot less original content being created. And then it's, if you go over and you look at streaming services, like I've been talking about for how long, people aren't finding that original content either. They're going to those services for comfort things like Suits on Netflix or Grey's Anatomy on Netflix. You know, I haven't watched an Amazon Prime original in months, but I've been rewatching Will and Grace and the Will and Grace Revival on Prime. On Hulu, that they're going to things like, or on Peacock rather, they're going to things like The Office and Parks and Rec, that they're not going to the original content that these streamers are creating. They're going to familiar content. Apple TV has no back catalog of content except for the Peanuts specials, and that is why their subscription numbers are so low. So it's a weird place. It's a really weird place. And speaking of weird places, the only other the only other news story that just broke that I actually want to talk about, because this was a very slow news week, like I said. So on what day? Friday, I guess. George Santos was expelled from Congress because he is garbage. And, you know, you can obviously, if you haven't heard all of the statistics about it, go look it up. You know, like what he did, he is alleged to have stolen lots of campaign funds and paid for like porn and filler on his face and all kinds of crazy shit on top of all the other stuff that he has already been accused of and all the other lies he's already told. So he was expelled. And already yesterday, Saturday, HBO announced that they are making a television movie about him. And it's going to be executive produced by Frank Rich, who did Veep. And it's going to be written by, I believe, another Veep writer. Which I think that that's probably a perfect tone. And they're describing it as like a dark comedy. And I think that's a perfect tone for any movie about George Santos. And it's apparently the movie is based on a book that came out last week, like literal days. Like he was expelled on Friday and the book came out the Tuesday before he was expelled. Like talk about kismet. It's going to be based on that book, kind of like Recount was. Not Recount. Yes, Recount. Yeah, Recount. The one about the Florida count in 2004. Kind of like Recount was and Game Change was. So it's going to be in that vein. Which those movies were both great, especially I loved Game Change. And I think that's hysterical. I just can't wait to see who they cast as George Santos. I tweeted some of my suggestions. I really want them to give an unknown or underrepresented queer person, queer comedian, this role. Like Harvey Guillen has been on, I think he was on Colbert. Every late night has had one of their own. I know Kimmel had one, I think, and Colbert had one. I think Harvey Guillen was the one on Colbert. He's from What We Do in the Shadows, and he's been a lot of other things, but I knew him from the show Huge on ABC Family, which is now Freeform, like, oh God, maybe like 15 years ago or so. And he's just so charming and lovely, and he does look a bit like George Santos. And he's like maybe the most likely of all my suggestions, but my other two are Jan from RuPaul's Drag Race season 12 and All Stars 6, because when the whole Katara Ravash thing where George Santos did drag in Brazil or something, and that photo came out of him in drag, and Jan had a viral TikTok where she wore a very similar dress and did her makeup to look like his messy ass Katara Ravash makeup, and the resemblance is fucking uncanny. And I just think that that would be very funny. And also Meatball, the drag queen who was on the first season of Dragula, which I'm going to talk about in the episode today, and who was also on a Netflix sitcom that I forget the name of that got canceled after one season, but like actually has acting experience, but also did an amazing drag performance as George Santos transforming into Katara Ravash on stage. And that also went viral. And even George Santos has talked about it. Like he was on Meghan McCain's podcast talking about how he was very flattered. Meatball's like, you didn't get what I was doing if you were flattered by that. That was not meant to celebrate you. I was making fun of you, you idiot. But that's what I'm gunning for. I want Jan or I want Meatball, or I'll take Harvey. It's probably going to be that guy from Veep, Nelson Franklin, who I think also was George Santos, maybe on Kimmel or Fallon, one of them. It's probably going to be him because he's been on Veep. And he does look very similar, but whatever. I just want a queer comedian to be that part and to like run with it. That's what I want. And that sounds hysterical and ridiculous and so stupid. And I can't wait for that movie to come out. Okay. Let's do a drag state of the union this week because I didn't really watch a whole lot of TV this week. Like I've mentioned in the past couple of weeks, I've been very busy. So I watched nothing new and I'm not even caught up on everything that I typically watch. But I did make sure that I watched the finale of Drag Race UK, which aired on Thursday, season 5 finale. I finally watched the first episode of Dragula season 5. And I also am caught up on season 4 of Canada's Drag Race. So let's start with the easy one. Drag Race season 5 in the UK crowned a new queen. Congratulations to, spoiler, skip ahead 30 seconds if you don't want this conversation, Ginger Johnson, who is the winner of Drag Race UK season 5. I enjoyed her very much. I thought she was very funny. A little one note, so maybe was not my particular choice for the win, but a very deserving winner. I was rooting of this top three for Michael Maruli, who I thought showed a bigger range of drag and I don't know. I just really enjoyed them. And I think we all know that Tamara Thomas was just kind of there as set decoration. It was really between Ginger and Michael. And I'm not disappointed in this season. I'm not disappointed in the winner. It's not who I wanted, but that doesn't matter because they were both very deserving. They each had three wins. And this ended up being a really fun season of Drag Race UK. It would probably rank third in of the five seasons, but that's nothing to sneeze at considering season two is like maybe one of the best seasons of Drag Race period ever. And considering how great the cast of season one is. So I'm happy that they ended up in this place and that it didn't completely shit the bed like I expected it would after I watched the premiere, as I talked about on the podcast, because of the queen who they had to like disqualify and Caramel not getting to the finale, which is still tragic. And I still can't believe she went home like fourth or fifth, something like that. Absolutely wild. But this was a really fun cast and a really fun overall campy season, and I enjoyed it much more than I did seasons 3 and 4. So if you haven't caught up on UK season 5, it's on WoW Presents Plus, and I highly recommend it. They're running a whole bunch of holiday specials, or you know, DM me, and if you know, you could get a VPN or something. You can figure it out. It's really fun. Also on WoW Presents Plus is season 4 of Canada's Drag Race, and now I know I've talked about Canada before. I enjoy Canada's Drag Race in a very different way than I enjoy the RuPaul-hosted seasons of Drag Race. I know I've mentioned that, like, Down Under is kind of like the redheaded stepchild of the RuPaul-hosted seasons. It definitely has, like, the lowest budget and all that stuff. But Canada's Drag Race is the redheaded stepchild of the redheaded stepchild. It's very fun in that it's Canada, so it's a recognizable place for Americans when we want to watch it. And when the casting is good, it's fucking good. Like, I mean, obviously, season one had Jimbo, and Jimbo just won All Stars 8. And it also had Lemon, who was one of my top streamed artists of the year on Spotify, and went on to Drag Race UK versus the World. And, like, when they get the casting right, they get it right. But so much of the show is just so bootleg. It's kind of funny. Like this season in particular, the seams are showing so much. Like they cast so many queens who have absolutely no personality. And this week's episode was a girl group challenge where they all had to like write verses, and it was painful to watch and listen to. Because they're all so boring and monotone that they're all rapping and it's just da 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 da. And they're like, even that was more variation, the da 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 da. They're not even doing that. It's just, it's one note, and they had to auto-tune all of them, even with just trying to hit one note as they're talking. It was so fucking weird and awkward. And like they're performing and they all have, half of them have dead face. Half of them are fucking up the choreography. Half of them don't know their own lyrics that they wrote for the lip sync. It was so terrible. And I feel like this happens not often, but too often, considering this is a fucking TV show on Canada's Drag Race, that I'm not surprised by it. Like, okay, the first two queens gone were CC Superstar and the Girlfriend Experience. Now, the Girlfriend Experience was gorgeous, a trans woman who had like incredible body, gave great face in the confessionals, and was just super interesting and fashion forward, but has no performance ability whatsoever. She couldn't do the choreography. She forgot all the lyrics to the lip sync in the lip sync for your life. She didn't know her own words for the lip sync in the song, like was just terrible. And again, very monotone. But also said that was because she had so much anxiety about her voice as a trans woman, which I also understand. CC Superstar, I swear to God, bitch's face didn't move. Like clunking around, can't walk in heels. It was so awkward. Like, how do the, like, are there 20 queens left in Canada's Drag Race and you had to cast 11 of them or 12 of them or whatever, like, in the whole country? Are you down to, like, the last couple dozen queens? It's so weird. Like, why? And it's even more pronounced because there are a couple of girls on this season who are so good, like Aurora Matrix, who won this week. And just see, like, this is every season. Every season there is a very clear better group and a very clear filler group. And this particular season has, it's the most pronounced it's ever been. Like, I'm thinking in season one. Let me go to season one. Like, okay, so Jimbo very clearly was in the top. Priyanka, who won, very clearly in the top group. Lemon, very clearly in the top group. Like, but then you have queens, like, that I don't remember them even being there. Like, Juicebox, who I've listened to their podcast and are great. I don't remember her what the fuck she did on the show. Kine, who has a book coming out about math. Don't remember a freaking thing she did on the show. Season two, who, oh, Rita Baga from season one, obviously in the better group too. Season two, Beth. Who the fuck is Beth? She was the first one who went home. Remember nothing about her. Oceanaco Black. Remember that one being very awkward. She was French speaking. And like Stephanie Prince, who then came back for Canada versus the World and went home early. Like, it was a very clear separation in all of these seasons of the ones who are going to do well and the ones who are not going to do well. And like I said, this season, and especially this season and last season, that separation has become more and more obvious. And especially this season, it is wild. However, it is still so entertaining because I think Canada's Drag Race knows that it's not like top of the heap of the WoW Presents Drag Race franchises. So they have fun with it. Like, the main host is a former Drag Race contestant, Brooklyn Heights from season 11 of American Drag Race. So they don't have any qualms about bringing on past contestants of Canada's Drag Race and of American Drag Race as guest judges, which I know a lot of people have been pushing for on the main series on RuPaul's Drag Race. Like, when RuPaul has created, or the show has created, stars out of people like Jinx and Bianca and Trixie and Alaska and Katya and Ginger and like these queens that are huge, right? Like, that are world, Bob the Drag Queen, that are world famous, that are doing amazing, huge things. You should have them back on the show and like co-hosting with you. But that don't ever happen because RuPaul is HBIC and needs to be the most famous drag queen on that panel. And that's fine. Canada's Drag Race does not have those qualms. So like this season, we've already gotten Raja O'Hara, who won Canada versus the World and was on two seasons of Drag Race. In the past, we've had Monet Exchange and Priyanka and Jimbo. I know there have been others. But they bring back the contestants to host, much like Dragula does, which we'll get to in a second. And I love that, like, sisterhood feeling of that, like, everyone's kind of equal. That even when you win, you can still come back and, I don't know, like, pay it forward, so to speak. Like, you can go back and kind of share your knowledge and your and what you've learned and what your experience was, and you can judge them more fairly because you know what the experience is like behind the scenes. So Canada's Drag Race season 4 currently airing. I have no freaking idea where the season is gonna go, because the cast is so strange and weak. I'm sorry to say, there it's such a weak cast that I watch every week being like, what, how much this can't get any worse, right? Like, and then somehow someone does something that is just it's always campy though. Like, it's never like someone is terrible to the point of discomfort. Like, I don't like that. When someone goes on a reality competition show in particular and just bombs and is just so terrible that it's hard to watch them because they do so poorly, it's more campy of, like, it's a camp version of not doing well because I mean, they're in drag, right? And I just, there, and like I said, there are a couple that I've really glommed onto and how much I like Aurora and Kitten Caboodle, who is almost 60 years old and is like the best version of every local bar's drag mother. Like, watching her reminds me so much of the queens in New Hope that I used to go to watch and then drink with on Monday nights when they would do their drag show, like Martini Madness and Carl Max and Morgan and like all the Thunder Showers and Summer Clearance and like all of these queens who are super high camp and very relatable. And like, Google kitten, like the cat, Caboodle, Kaboodle, like Kit and Caboodle, but Kitten Caboodle, get it? Yeah, whatever. Anyway, first of all, I mean, just her name is very old school drag, right? Just Google her and you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. She has the aesthetic of every local queen, which isn't to say that it's bad, but like the most heightened, well done version of it. She has the sense of humor of every local queen, but like the best, most heightened version of it. And I just love her and I want her to win the whole season. She won episode 2 and but then she was in the bottom episode 3. But I need her to go all the way. I fucking love Kitten Caboodle so much. And like I said, even when she was bad this week in episode 3, like, it was still camp and ridiculous. And then she's doing like this really sexy lip sync song where the lyric is, "I like the taste of your tongue." And she's like doing Shanae turns across the whole stage. Like, it was just so funny and campy. I love it. Anyway, Canada's Drag Race season 4 also on WOW Presents Plus. And now finally, I got around to watching the first episode of Dragula season 5. It's free without a subscription on Amazon Prime Shudder channel. And I know I've talked probably briefly about Dragula in the past. I always enjoy it. It is a very fun kind of right-hand turn from the Drag Race girls, not from the formula, because as much as the Boulets love to shade RuPaul and, you know, try to differentiate themselves as something quote-unquote different from Drag Race, it is very much the same show. Like, it is the same format. It has gotten more like Drag Race as the seasons go on because it has to. You know what I mean? Like, the reason Drag Race wins an Emmy every year for Best Reality Competition Series is that they have really perfected the format. That they know what works and why it works, and that's why it's fun to watch. So, Dragula has gotten more and more like Drag Race over the seasons, where there's a mini challenge that gives you a leg up in the main challenge, and then on the main challenge there's a winner, and then two people are in the bottom, and then they have to complete a task, and then the person who loses goes home. You know, like, it's obviously not a lip sync, or not always a lip sync. It's, you know, these, what they call fright feats, where you have to, or no, extermination challenges rather, where you have to like do something extreme. But my biggest issue with Dragula is that, at least with the lip sync for your life, you can watch it and you can maybe disagree with the outcome. Like, maybe you think one queen, the queen that goes home, did better in the lip sync, or you liked their interpretation better, but you see both of what they're doing and there is some type of like subjective opinion to it, but we get to see it. And we know that it's just like, which one is preferred as the one that wins. That makes more sense because that's what reality competition series are, right? Project Runway, America's Next Top Model, Top Chef, like all these things where there's a subjective quality to it, but at least there's going to be an explanation of why that happened the way that it did. Dragula doesn't always have that. Like, in the first episode, the bottom two for the main challenge were Satana and JK. And they had to hike up a mountain in wherever they film, I don't know, California somewhere, to this bridge to nowhere, which I have heard of before. I don't know why, but I have heard of it. So they had to hike 5 miles to this bridge and then bungee jump off of it in the middle of the night. Okay, great. And if one of them chickens out, then we have a very clear winner. Like in season 3, the first episode, the extermination challenge was they had to jump out of an airplane. And Violencia did not do it. So she went home. That makes sense. But in this case, they both did the hike. They both jumped off the bridge and bungeed. So how do you decide which one goes home? Do you know what it, like, then they're just eliminating who they want. I haven't watched it yet, but in episode 3, the challenge is to be tied down to a bed and covered in cheese and rats. Okay. So if you do that, who goes home? In one of the, I think maybe season 3 or 4, they had to get tattoos and they all got the tattoos. So if you all get the tattoos, how do you decide who goes home? You've all done the thing that you're supposed to do. So then it's just the Boulets who host the show and promote the show and have their name in the title of the show and created the show, that they're just deciding who they want to keep and there's no rhyme or reason to it. And that's why I'm not very emotionally connected to Dracula ever, is that I can watch it and enjoy it and have fun with it. And I always do. But it's really hard to get attached to any of the contestants because they could just be eliminated for absolutely no reason in any given episode. And then even like the winning and stuff like that, I've realized that I think that I have very different opinions and tastes than the Boulets do. In this first episode, Blackberry was in the top, and the theme was Terror in the Woods, and they had to make a costume that reflected this theme of Terror in the Woods for the floor show, which is basically like the runway. And they had to make it beforehand, so they all knew what they were doing, and Blackberry created a look that was like as if she was in a slasher movie, a campy one where in the middle of the night she got stabbed or shot through with arrows that had marshmallows roasting on them. So she was like wearing a sleeping bag as a dress and her hair was out of control and she had like marshmallows coming out of her. And like, I thought it looked not good, but they loved it. Niohuru X won that challenge, and you couldn't see her face because she was wearing a wolf mask, and not even a good one. Like, not even one that moved with her face. It was just like a Halloween, like a rubber Halloween wolf mask. And there were other parts of it that were really good. It was the nine-tailed fox, like from Lovecraft Country and Chinese folklore. And the rest of it looked more interesting, but I couldn't get over the face. Seeing like Orgotek does this like type of special effects makeup in quote unquote drag that looks like he's a burn victim. I don't like it, but they do. So it's just, yeah, it's a very weird show to get invested in. So why has it been 4 or 5 episodes and I just started watching it and probably won't continue watching it until I can binge everything all at once after the season ends, is because it's hard to get emotionally invested in it when there doesn't really seem to be a solid foundation for how people win, how people go home. And then you're looking like some of these people, I don't know why they're there. Like Satana does not fit any of the tenets of Dracula, drag, horror, filth, glamour. She does drag, but I don't think she does any of the others. So based on this first episode, like it was called Terror in the Woods and she was dressed like a fairy. Nothing terror about it at all. Like a complete fail. And then also they just do whatever they want. In the first episode, JK gets exterminated, but then she comes back in the second episode. And I even know that without having watched any of the other episodes because of the trailer. Like it got spoiled in the trailer. So they just do whatever they want. And that's their prerogative, it's their show, but that doesn't make for a very interesting viewing experience, for me anyway. Like, if I need there to be rules and I need there to be reasons for the show. And I need them to stop, like, bringing on Queens Ira, like, just to fucking screw them over. Like, Onyx on Dix was the first queen from Philadelphia to be on one of these major drag shows. And Philly has a great drag scene. It's really weird drag scene sometimes, but it has a really good drag scene, like a really solid underground, like rough around the edges, but cool, campy drag scene. And Onyx on Dix is very well known in Philadelphia for their drag and just got ripped to shreds in the first episode. And I do not understand why. Like, they just singled her out as like, we're going to make fun of, we're going to pick on you. Like, there were other looks and people they could have picked on for other reasons, and they just chose Onyx because reasons, you know? I don't know. But the production quality, I'll say this, of season five, high, good, very nice. I don't know, but I feel like the Boulets are trying to course correct because the Titan season was not very well received, including by me, which was like their version of All Stars. So they're trying to, like, I don't know. I don't know what they're doing, to be totally honest. They're not changing the format of the show, so to speak, but it does feel very different this season than season four did and then Titans did, and I don't know what to account for that, like, or I don't know what accounts for that. But yeah, it definitely looks like it costs more money, which is good. It definitely, like, finally doing bungee jumping as an exclamation challenge is fun. Like, I've been wondering why the fuck that wasn't done earlier, and so have a lot of fans on the internets. But then just, like, still continuing to save people that it seems like are your friends or that you just enjoy in life rather than, I don't know, trying to foster these queens who maybe need feedback that's constructive rather than, I don't like this, I hate this, which they do a lot of. They do a lot of, I don't like this, or I hate your shoes, wear different shoes. I hate this, like JK's whole thing for this first episode was, this looks very store-bought. Well, yeah, bitch, it probably is. It probably is. They had to prepare for a whole season of Dragula. And when you ask for Terror in the Woods and they decide they want to be like a Boy Scout, they're going to buy a Boy Scout uniform. Of course they are. They're not going to just like, why would you spend the time and money and energy to make a Boy Scout uniform when you can just buy one? And then since you're going to fuck it up anyway with like marshmallow goo and fake blood, why would you not just buy a cheap one on Amazon? Like, it's a stupid critique that's not helpful. Like, when you tell people to prepare for a show, they bring what they bring. They can't just like change that. So when you say something like, I don't like the clothes that you have on, well, that's what they brought. So like, they can't change that. Can you say like, you could do this to style it better so it doesn't look so store-bought? Like for JK, could they have said like, maybe you should have distressed it more so it didn't look like it just came out of a plastic bag from Amazon. They could have done that. Or you could have added patches to it to make it more personal, or whatever they wanted out of her that wasn't just to make it look quote unquote store-bought, whatever that means to them. Give them that feedback instead of saying, I don't like this. Do you know what I'm saying? Like RuPaul, I feel like has gotten, and Michelle Visage, like the judging panel of Drag Race has gotten more of that. Over the years, they've gotten used to doing more of that and less of the, like, Michelle saying, I don't like green. You know what I mean? That it's more like, if you brought this, like, you can't control the clothes that you brought, so sell the garment. You know what I mean? Like, okay, you have what you have. Make it look more expensive by performing while you're in it, or by embellishing, or whatever, or make sure that if you have like a really simple costume, that you have like a real, that the wig is great or the shoes are better or that you accessorize it correctly or whatever. The Boulets don't do that. They're just like, I don't like it. I hate it. They say I hate it a lot. Like they literally eliminated someone in season 4 because he was wearing quote club kid boots. They're like, I hate your boots. You're in the bottom. That it was wild. Absolutely fucking wild. Wild. But like I said, it is still a very entertaining show. Just harder to get, I think, emotionally invested in. But if you're looking for a fun drag show that isn't on WoW Presents Plus, this is on Shudder and AMC Plus if you have either of those. And if you don't, you can get a free month of Shudder. But just Google like Shudder promo code. Every time you use a new email, you get a free month. So go for it. Then you can also get like, I think, a free week on Amazon Prime Video channels. There are ways around paying for Shudder. And then you also get Shudder, which I always enjoy when I have it. I don't think it's really worth the money because I don't watch it that often. But whenever I do have it, I enjoy the content that they have. They also have a new Christmas slasher movie out called It's a Wonderful Knife. That sounds fun. I'll watch that soon too. So yeah, season 5 of Dragula on Shudder. Okay, speaking of the holidays, let's get into the Hallmark Countdown to Christmas recommendation for the week. Okay, on Thursday, our movie is To All a Good Night. A small-town photographer saves the life of a mysterious man who may just be in town to buy her family's parkland, which is also the location of the annual Christmas celebration. That's on Thursday at 8 o'clock, and it stars Kimberly Sustad, who I enjoy, and Mark Ganame, whoever that is. There is also, on the Hallmark Movies Now app, and airing at like 7 a.m., I think, on Thursday, a new movie called Rescuing Christmas, starring Rachel Lee Cook and Sam Page, who are both Hallmark Christmas mainstays, so I'm a little annoyed that this is on the streaming service instead. Rescuing Christmas. In a world where Santa is real and wants to drum up some holiday spirit, two of Santa's elves, Chuck and Debbie... I didn't read this beforehand. Why are the elves named Chuck and Debbie? What the fuck? Where two of Santa's elves, Chuck and Debbie, devise a plan to grant one human on Earth 3 wishes to kickstart the holidays. This doesn't sound like a typical Hallmark movie. Maybe that's why it's on the app. I don't know. But that does sound fun. I may have to do a free trial so I can watch that one. Okay. On Friday, December 8th at 8 o'clock, Magic in Mistletoe. Harrington is the author of a popular book series, but commercial success has left him a bitter recluse. As he returns to his hometown for an annual Christmas festival celebrating his books, he's joined by April, a publicist for the major publishing house he works with. Sounds boring. I love the cast. It's Lindy Greenwood, who is on Sleepy Hollow, and Paul Campbell, who writes, directs, and stars in a lot of these movies. And even though his hair looks terrible in this promo photo, and the plot sounds stupid. If he's a recluse, why is he going to a Christmas festival? Maybe. Saturday. Christmas on Cherry Lane. A young couple preparing to welcome their first child. An empty nester and her fiancé ready to start a new chapter. And a couple who unexpectedly have the chance to expand their family on Christmas Eve celebrate the holiday as they navigate these turning points in their lives. Starring Catherine Bell, Jonathan Bennett, John Brotherton, Aaron Cahill, James Denton, and Vincent Rodriguez III. This is going to be my recommendation for the week, most likely. It's an ensemble piece. It's 3 couples. One of them is queer, and they're both parts are played by queer actors. I love that Hallmark is one of the very few, entities that is like actively trying to cast queer people to play queer parts, especially considering they're not so great history with the queer community. But Jonathan Bennett, Aaron Samuels from Mean Girls, is one part of the queer couple, and the other is Vincent Rodriguez III, who was Josh on Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. They're a couple, and then John Brotherton is from Fuller House, and he's paired with Aaron Cahill, and then you have Catherine Bell and James Denton, and this is a great cast, and it sounds very similar to the Christmas House in like, or seems similar to The Christmas House with Jonathan Bennett, which I loved both of those movies. And if we get those kind of vibes, I'm excited for that one. But the Sunday movie I'm also super excited for. It's called Round and Round, and it's the Hanukkah one. So Rachel's stuck in a time loop, reliving the night of her parents' Hanukkah party. Can Zach, the nice boy grandma's trying to set her up with, help her make it to tomorrow? It's Groundhog's Day, but with Hanukkah, and it stars Brian Greenberg, who, oh, love him. He was in, what is the name of the movie? Prime, with Meryl Streep and Gwyneth Paltrow. He was also in How to Make It in America, I think it was called, on HBO. He's also a singer-songwriter. I love him, and I'm really annoyed that he isn't, like, a big leading man, because he's so handsome and so, like, relatable in things, and I enjoy him. So I'm excited that he's in a Hallmark movie. And then Rick Hoffman, who you'll know is like, oh, that guy from a lot of things, most recently Eli Roth's Thanksgiving movie, is also in it in a supporting role. So I'm also excited for that one. Like, maybe just to shake it up, I'll make Round and Round my recommendation. That's the Sunday movie. But like I said, the Saturday movies this season have been the best. And the Saturday is Christmas on Cherry Lane. So I don't think you can go wrong with either of those. And I'm excited to have two movies I'm looking forward to this week, considering this past weekend I wasn't looking forward to any of them. And I was justified, because I've watched two of the four so far, and they are both in the bottom 10 of my Hallmark movies for the year. So there's that. All right. Just some like random wrap-up things. Spotify Wrapped came out this week, and I had some really fun statistics. So if you listen to this podcast on Spotify, thank you. I had a 25% increase in followers, which I know how many followers I have, and it's not very many, so that's not as exciting, but it's nice to know. But then, like, also a lot of things that I can't really share, not, like, because they're private, like, there's no share button. Like, it's not, they're not on the cards that Spotify makes for you. But they tell you, like, what other genres people who, like of music, people who listen to your podcast listen to. And to be expected, the number one genre that that you all who listen on Spotify listen to in music is pop, which makes sense. This is a pop culture recap podcast. But whoever my listener or listeners are, please let me know if this is you, whose top genre is alternative metal. Because that was my number two or three top genres of my listeners. If that is you, who are you? Thank you. I don't know how you listen to my gay-ass voice, like, complaining about three drag shows that are all on the air at the same time, or about fellow travelers and the hot gay sex that Matt Bomer is having with Jonathan Bailey, or me bitching and moaning about how I don't like this year's Hallmark Christmas movies as much as last year's, and then just go and listen to alternative metal. Appreciate you. So there's that. If you do listen on Spotify, thank you. Please share the podcast. Thank you if you are sharing it. Like, another one of those wrapped things is that my most shared episode was from a few weeks ago. It's the one on What Were We Thinking in the 90s, and that it was mostly shared on Instagram, which is interesting because I have never shared my podcast on Instagram, even though I have one. Like, I've never included a link to it on Instagram. So, like, that's fun, and thank you to whoever is doing this. Continue sharing it, review it. Thank you for listening to this podcast. Like, this is just me in my, you know, my living room on a Sunday morning every week, just like monologuing because I am bored and narcissistic. Do you know what I mean? So thank you if you are actually taking the time to listen to, like, the nearly, this year I made almost 1,000 minutes of podcasting, which is wild. In 2022, I made like over 1,200 minutes of my podcast. It's like, this is wild. So if you're spending like 1,000 minutes with me a year, you're crazy. And I love you. Thank you. And again, no matter what platform you listen on, thank you for listening to this. And I've mentioned before, I'm like coming up on 100 episodes. I think this is not either 97 or 98, this current episode you're listening to. And I would love to do like something fun and celebratory for the 100th episode, but I'm lazy and probably won't. But just the fact that, like, I don't know, most podcasts don't make it past 10 episodes, and I'm like 10 times that right now. And a lot of you are still like listening every week. It's weird. And I don't know who most of you are. Like, okay, so getting, why am I even talking about the Spotify Wrapped is no one that I know in my actual life, except maybe one, TJ, hello, my roommate from college, listens to this on Spotify. Like, all of my friends I know who have told me, oh, I listened to your podcast either regularly or I have listened a couple of times or whenever, is all on Apple Podcasts. So the fact that I have people listening on Spotify is fun, and sharing via Spotify is fun because I literally don't know who you are. That means that you are actual people who have just stumbled upon this podcast and are enjoying it. And that's so fun for me. And also, this is purely self-indulgent. Feel free to skip 30 seconds to the end of the episode. As you know, I do theater. I've mentioned before, I've been cast in a show right now, and I directed a show over the summer, which is partially why I don't do summer episodes, is that I'm usually doing theater. And I directed the Philadelphia area premiere of a play called The Cake, which is by Becca Brunstetter, who was nominated for an Emmy for This Is Us. She's written a bunch of episodes of This Is Us and Switched at Birth and some other shows. And it was a wonderful play. It was off-Broadway in 2018, I think. And we did the Philadelphia premiere of it, and I got to direct it. And one of my very best friends who listens to this podcast was in it. And it was a wonderful experience. And we've been nominated for a bunch of awards on Broadway World, which is the winners are decided based on votes. So if you would like, I'm going to put a link in the show notes. And if you are so inclined, please go vote for me for Best Director. All of my cast is nominated in different categories. Our leading lady is nominated in Best Performer in a Play. Her name is Meg. And then all three supporting characters, Tia Brown, Haley Rubens-Topolesky, and Tom Hoy, they are all nominated in Supporting Performer. Vote for them. It's also up for Best Play in general. So all of those, if you would go vote, you don't have to vote in every category. You can do no nominee. You can, you know, I would love your vote. All you need is an email address. You put that in, you vote, and then after you submit, they will ask you to create an account. You can if you want to. I would recommend not. They'll ask you to sign up for the newsletter. I would recommend not. They send a lot. And then once you submit your vote, you have to confirm it via email. So then check your email afterward, check your spam folder if you don't get it, and make sure you click the link to confirm your vote. And that would just be lovely because I want to win something. And even though it was the Philly premiere of this play, it was in a very small theater outside of the city. And, you know, it was a 4-person play. So right now, everything that's leading has like a bunch of kids in it and stuff because their parents are voting and telling their crazy friends and family on Facebook to vote for them. So this is my way of doing that. So that's it for me. Thank you so much for tuning into this episode of Fake TV Critic. I'll be back next week with more news, more recaps, more reviews, more analyses, and more recommendations. Have a great week, everyone.